What's the relationship between theory and art? You know, I think the common assumption, and I think the instinct, is to assume that a film, a painting, a book, or really just anything that happens in life, life itself, events, you know, people, are instantiations or examples of a theory. And that if you picture that sort of architecturally, you have the theory on top. You have Freud, and you have his theory of, you know, the ego and superego and the id or of Oedipus or of the dream work. Then you have the examples. So, you know, for instance, somebody watches, you know, David Lynch's Blue Velvet. I remember in college and people saying, oh, yeah, that's the film's Oedipal. As if life was the example of this thing that was theory that was somehow fixed. And in instances like that, a theory becomes a kind of law, a rule, an axiom, right? It's an architecture that is hierarchical. What I want to suggest and what I want to proffer, and as I've proffered for, you know, eons now, is a different architecture. An architecture that is distributed. You know, I'd say networked, but I've got to think about that word more. But let's use networked, meaning strands and nodes and things going in different directions, just distributed without a hierarchy. So, you know, what is theory and what is the relationship then between theory and art? In a distributed architecture as distinct from a hierarchical architecture, right? If I'm no longer making or reading art as examples of a theory, what is the relationship between this thing, this painting I'm looking at, this film I'm watching, and this theory that I've read, this theory that I think I know? Let's think for a moment about what theory is. You know, theory is... Let's say it's a written form. We'll qualify that maybe in a little bit. It's almost mathematical or scientific in that it seeks to put things in relations and explain and proffer and suggest and discover. Maybe that's really the word here. Discover relations between various elements, right? It is a distributive schema, right? This goes here, this goes there. I mean, let's say Foucault, for example. You know, Foucault proffers a theory of discourse, a relationship between discourse and power, and he says, you know, rather than power being something that says no, that restricts, he says power creates. Power creates through discourse, and power comes from everywhere, flows through everything, because it is constitutive. It is power creates things, right? So he takes the same elements as you know a theory, you know, a negative theory of power, a non-constructivist theory of power, but he just redistributes it, right? He puts bodies here. He makes the relationships between language, bodies, individuals and other bodies, concepts, and he just moves them all around. He sort of scrambles them, right? And he says, this is how I see things going together. This is how things operate. What's interesting to me is, you know, even as I hear myself talking, is to me that sounds like, let's say, what a painter or filmmaker does. Or, you know, a novelist, they take various elements and they distribute them. They see things going this way. And let's say, you know, you take a Jasper Johns, you know, and he says, okay, I see all these other things people have done, de Kooning and Picasso and, you know, the whole history of art, you know, Velasquez and... you know, and just redistributes them. He says, okay, I'm going to take this, and I'm going to take that. And then he does some interesting things. He says, okay, well, I'm going to actually grab an image from over here that maybe is outside the art world, you know. images, the sort of this wider distribution of images rather than looking just within the frame of canvases. And so he, in so doing, what Johns actually ends up doing is, in a sense, creating, I will say, a theory, although it's not quite a theory, and we'll get back to that, of what counts as a painting, what counts as an image, right? The minute he takes, you know, the flag, he has shifted the sort of the terms of distribution of what constitutes art. Of course, Duchamp did this earlier, and so, you know, Pollock begins to, Johns begins to find these sort of, these are the sort of network. He's sort of taking from Duchamp, but then he's actually going even stranger into constructed images and moving them into the frame, right? In this sense, from this perspective, a painter, by which I mean not the person per se, but let's say the body of work, and let's say a book of theory, let's say Foucault's Discipline and Punish, or Foucault's oeuvre, which of course he critiques himself, that very notion, but let's say his body of work, they both are these distributive schemes, right? They just are taking various elements and they're seeing various things and they're going, oh, goes like this. This is how I see things. This is my perspective on the world. This is a perspective on the world. This is the world happening from this perspective. And yet, of course, a painting and a work of theory are different things. This is something that Deleuze and Guattari, you know, look at in What is Philosophy, you know, in which they say, you know, art, mathematics, and philosophy all are creative. They're all constructivist projects, but they work with different materials. Philosophy, they say, creates concepts. And that's not to say that art and mathematics don't involve concepts, but it's not the main material. It's not really what they're creating. They deploy concepts. Concepts might emerge, but it's not the foreground, really, of what they're doing. Artists, according to Deleuze and Guattari, is that work with affect, right, and percepts. They deploy these moments of perceptual trajectory, this flow, a Pollock drip, a Rauschenberg erasure, a John's flag. It's color and it's a piece of perception, but also an affect, right? So you get Rothko's kind of contemplative, perhaps melancholy, I'm not quite sure, but definitely a kind of contemplative quiet, or, you know, the sort of frenetic, frenzied joy of Matthew Ritchie. They lead with those things. Now, of course, theory, philosophy, and they're not quite the same thing at all, have affect too, right? It's one thing I love Foucault. I love the joy he takes. I love his dark humor and like Discipline and Punish and Issue of Sexuality, especially when he talks about perversions. The point being that theory and art are both creative things. They're both constitutive of this world. Neither explains the other. In order to be an explanation of something, you have to, in a sense, be at a remove from it or outside its fray. Right. I suppose here I am explaining something, but maybe I'm trying to take myself outside the fray, but at the same time enmesh myself in it in this sort of process of live thinking it through. So when I taught, art classes, I taught MFAs, I taught critical theory. I taught a little bit of Kant. I taught some Deleuze. I taught Merleau-Ponty, but I would teach them not as modes to explain what they're doing, I hope, but as gestures, as an art. Let's say an art student, goes to a class on, modernism. They're going to see other pieces of work. They're going to see installations and videos and paintings and prints. And they're going to situate themselves vis-a-vis those things. And when an artist looks at other artists, they might just steal a gesture. They might steal a line. They might steal a possibility. Just as, you know, John's flags in a way, you know, are related or swapping this thing from Duchamp's, you know, ready-mades. But then doing something else with it. But it's one work doesn't explain the other. They're going together. They borrow from each other. They steal from each other. They inflect each other. They sometimes are just indifferent to each other, just doing different things. It's the same with theory. It's the same with theory. So, you know, you make paintings. You paint paintings, I suppose. But I suppose there's other ways of making paintings. I'm not sure. And then there's Kant, you know, and then there's Foucault. They're just making shapes too, little gestures, little moments. The relationship between the critical theorist and the artist is one of back and forth, of give and take. Neither determines the other. Neither is the critic and neither is the host. They are both hosts to each other in a kind of emergent mutual inflection, a kind of going together. So when I taught theory to artists, I didn't make them write papers. I wasn't interested in their mastery of the material. Meaning when I taught undergraduates, I really wanted them to have a certain command of, you know, of Merleau-Ponty. When I taught artists, I didn't care whether they had a command of Merleau-Ponty. What I wanted them was just to find a moment, a gesture, something they could work with. Yeah, that's a good riff. That's a good moment. I love the chiasmus. I love the seer in the scene. I love the figure of someone touching their own hand. Or, you know, in Deleuze, you know, I love the figure of the fold to infinity. Or emergent shapes rather than determinative shapes. I taught more again as these gestures, much as I might teach another artist and say, okay, let's look at this artist and let's see what figures. Let's look at it almost as a craft and the kinds of things you can create. And of course, it goes the other direction as well, right? So just as a fine artist might pick up a gesture, a possibility, a trajectory, a trope from a theorist, theory gathers figures, affects, shapes, modes of going vis-a-vis art, in its engagement with art. I definitely learned a lot about systems, emergent systems, and distributed systems through Matthew Ritchie. It's one reason I'm quite attracted to him. I learned a lot about the model of the image, you know, what an image even is, of course, from Warhol. Warhol is one of the great, in a way, philosophers of the image. It's a mutual going. It's a going with. It's not a mode of explanation. And, you know, when I was in the academy, there were definitely teachers, professors who would teach... We teach a theory, let's say Freudian film theory, and they would have their students perform readings. Read this film and do a Freudian reading of it. To me, that's not about learning to read film. That's about learning to read Freud. And as such, is a good assignment. That's how you learn to deploy Freud. When you're learning a theory, you want to kind of see it everywhere, right? You want to see how it sees. And that makes a certain sense, right? But if you're actually teaching critical thinking, then you would never ask someone to do a Freudian reading of a film. You would say Freud is another thing that goes with that film. So is everything you ever experienced. So is the game of baseball. So is, you know, Gary Sheffield's crazy, you know, batting posture. So is, you know, Tim Lincecum's windup. So is, you know, the slickness of, you know, the neoliberal design that pervades, you know, Brooklyn and San Francisco, clean, reclaimed wood, all understated though, not too nutty. All these things are gestures we might or might not apprehend, take in, deploy, engage, use. So again, teaching people to read something, let's say a film or a work of art, through a theory is a way to teach the theory. It's not a way to teach how to read a film or a work of art. The relationship then between theory and art is that they are, they're both art. They're both theory. They're both constitutive of this world. There's no hierarchy. They're both part of this world, and as such, they go together or not. They inflect each other or not, just as any things do.